Shop the Sherwin-Williams 4th of July sale and get 30% off paints and stains June 26th through July 6th. Whether you're refreshing your interior or exterior, we've got the colors to bring your vision to life. And with delivery, getting everything to your door is easier than ever. Shop online to have it delivered or visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only, some exclusions apply. See store for details. Delivery available on qualifying orders.
We have the tech to get food delivered in 15 minutes, but we all have horror stories about buying tickets. The Game Time app gives fans the advantage. Get amazing tickets in just a few taps. Fees are included, so what you see is what you pay. And the Game Time guarantee means authentic tickets at the best price every time. Take the guesswork out of buying tickets to concerts, sports, comedy, and more with Game Time. Download the Game Time app and create an account for $20 off your first purchase. Terms apply.
The show is about to begin.
Hang in there,
dude,
it is.
That's Smiley Kaufman for 61. Wow.
Featuring Smiley Kaufman.
If you're around a local IHOP at a PGA Tour event, you might see Hideki Matsuyama.
Put it up in the stance, strengthen the grip.
His co-host, Charlie Hume.
We've now picked five of the last eight winners on the PGA Tour.
Oh, it's going to hole. Please go in the hole. Please go in the hole. Please go in the hole.
Yes, sir.
And the biggest names in golf.
That's a great question. Can I talk about it?
I don't think I'm ready.
How good does it get, SK?
Why not ask, Charlie?
Today, live from the Pinecrest Inn, it's the Smiley Show. So long, everybody. This is the Smiley Show.
I'm sitting here on Friday morning of Travelers Championship Week with Smiley Kaufman, and we are looking forward to a weekend ahead of good golf. We're going to recap that in the show. In fact, if you're listening to this on podcast, you probably just heard a recap of that tournament. But right now, we have to react to the most seismic announcement, Smiley, that we've heard about what the PGA Tour will look like in the future. We had this date circled on our calendar for a couple months since the Players Championship press conference that Brian Rolapp held, saying, hey, a lot of new changes upcoming. We're going to gather some information and put something out in front of you at the Travelers. And we now have it. We heard about this two-track system. They now have names, the Championship Series and the Challenger Series. There are a lot of other things we need to get into. If I tried to tee up this episode, Smiley, by reading through all the information, it'd be like filibustering. It'd be like reading a phone book, and we'd be 30 minutes in, and then we'd get your first comment. So where I want to start on this is, and by the way, if you haven't read about this or haven't seen about this, it's all posted on the PGA Tour website, so you can kind of follow along there, and we'll interject with details. But you saw this press conference. You had a chance to talk to some people at the tour and kind of ask questions about things that were particularly interesting to you. What was your reaction to Brian Rolapp unveiling this, given all we've discussed on the show for the last couple of years about just wanting some clarity as to what the PGA Tour structure should look like?
Well, definitely. There's a ton of lines and a ton of notes to get through and all this, but I would say that none of it has been overly surprising. Maybe just the name of track one and track two. I think in the past, there's always been this potential of, oh, what could the PGA Tour look like? It's been kind of released step by step along the way. It feels like they've been leaking this for quite some time. So based on all the players that I have talked to, the general communication has been good from the PGA Tour and the players. I think when it comes to mistakes that the tour has made, especially just from the LIV and the PGA Tour debacle when they tried to make that deal, there was no communication with the players. Now, the player directors and the board and the new FCC, it seems like they've been working to get to this point to where they have what I think is potentially a future for what the PGA Tour is going to operate like moving forward. Now, I do think that Brian Rolapp's one thing when he got to the PGA Tour, he spoke with all the players, got their feedback. But I think when he was looking at just how the tour operates, we've talked about it. It's already a track one and a track two system, but everything's a PGA Tour event and their top product, which doesn't make a whole lot of sense when you're looking at the fields. You're seeing who gets in this and who gets in that. From what I had heard, you know, Rolap saw it as, you know, we kind of have our major leagues and our AAA all in one league. We need to make that easier to, you know, for the fans to be able to figure out. And I think now this system is definitely the championship series is the major leagues. And then the challenger series would be the AAA, Corn Ferry's AA, PGA America's single A. It's very much like how a baseball major league process and just their hierarchy, if you will, on how their league works. And it does make sense. We have enough players that are playing professional golf to fill these tours. The question becomes is the championship series with 120 guys. That's a small amount of players compared to what we're accustomed to for everyone keeping a full PGA Tour card.
Yeah, it's not dissimilar in some ways to the sort of stratified tennis model that we've seen, where there are different tournaments that have different sort of. I understand that the tours are split, but it's. I think that the key piece of what has been done here is for the last couple of years, we're just asking for tell me what this event is, and don't sell me on something that it's not. Right. And this seems like it's going to very clearly be, you know, what you are watching when you're tuning in. You know what the difference is between a championship series event and a challenger series event. And you know the players you're going to see in those fields. I actually think it's not too dissimilar to what we had prior to the last couple of years of experimentation. You know, whether or not some of it, I think, was there's a quote in here from Brian Rolap. I'm not gonna be able to pull up right now, but just essentially saying that it wasn't like LIV forced any of these changes, but LIV sort of exposed some of the inefficiencies in the way we do things. And so there was mm-hmm. this, it seems like the last couple of years we've had this interim period of to keep guys on the PGA Tour, we have to create events and ways, you know, that are going to get money in their pockets, you know, sort of free of having to play good golf. We're going to do no cut events for guys that have earned their way in the previous year. And that's going to keep these guys satisfied and feel like they're not missing out on a big payday. What this feels like is we're back to everything that happened before in many contexts, 120 player fields, cuts, but it's just better organized. It's just more streamlined. It's just easier to understand. And I think ultimately for everyone that's been, you know, a fan of the PGA Tour for years and looking at the last couple of years and saying, I don't know if this really represents the type of meritocracy I want to see. This very much feels like a meritocracy. And like maybe one of the things we'll get into as we continue discussing this is there are still things out there they have to figure out, eligibility criteria for both series, career, you know, milestone, medical extension rules. There's still like minor details they have to figure out. But by and large, you know, the only way to lock up your card going forward on the championship series is to be one of the top 90 players at the end of that season. That just keeps shrinking, and that's going to make it very competitive.
Well, I want to look at this too from a PGA Tour player standpoint and seeing where I would have fit in this, just as a player who was on and off being on the top tier tour, but also back and forth between the Korn Ferry Tour. I see this as, especially with how purse sizes have changed really since the beginning of LIV. When I got to the PGA Tour, I would say that a good purse was somewhere between 7 and 8 million. That was a really good mm-hmm. purse. You saw some events like the lower tiered purses, like a John Deere, was around 3.5 million. And now we have 20+ million dollar purses, right? But then also you look at our medium to bottom purses. Those are closer to, you know, 6 to 9 to 10 million, which is a, you know, a drastic jump compared to where purses were just a decade ago. And so now when you look at this new championship series and challenger series, you'd see that the minimum purses, now this just says minimum purse, so it could mm-hmm. exceed $4 million for the challenger series. But I think about, you know, how many Korn Ferry Tour events are in 1 year. 25 is what they're playing this year. They're saying from February to August, they'll say 20+ events. Mm-hmm. And for the championship series, 23 to 24 events. Now, it includes the majors. It includes, I think it maybe Ryder includes Cup. A cup too.
Yep.
So yeah. It'll be either one or the other, but that'll be 20 million at minimum. So clearly it makes sense that you're, elevated tour will be for that amount of money, but I see it as the challenger series is a huge drop off compared to what these guys were making. Now the Korn Ferry Tour, if which apparently still is going to be there. They're talking about a Q school that will qualify you for either the Challenger Series or the Q school, or Corn Ferry Tour, which I would think that more people might be coming out of Q school now because they're going to have to fill these spots. You get 144 per event for Challenger Series. And then potentially during the summertime, like you get 156 playing in the Corn Ferry Tour. So there is clear pathways for more young professional golfers from if the America's Tour continues to go on to where mini tours won't be quite as involved as they are now, because I think there will be more places to play in this ecosystem.
You know what I think is interesting about that is I would have loved to have been a fly on the wall for a lot of this in terms of how they're coming up with these concepts, how they're, Maverick McNeely was on this future competitions committee. So we knew we had some models involved. We know we were running this stuff through some models, making sure it all made sense.
Well, he's the one he was the one that got the weighted distribution to be right.
That's right.
The first time they got the signature event model where it's like, hey, I finished fourth place at Houston, but apparently it's not as good as an 18th at the Travelers Championship. It's like
some no cut deal that, again, was like the sort of artificially created thing that was meant to be a sort of stopgap while we figured out what we really want to do going forward. So, but I just on that piece, it's interesting to look at the history of what is now the Korn Ferry Tour. It's had a million different names in our lifetime being golf fans. It was the web.com, the Nike Tour, the something builders. I'm going to forget all the names off the top of my head. It's had a million different tour names, I guess, is the point. And so in looking at that, of course, you have a great partner in the Korn Ferry Tour that's supporting it financially. But I wonder if part of the calculus here was we have all these guys, some of whom on the Korn Ferry Tour will play in regular PGA Tour events. Should we just make this branding stronger across these two tiers? If we already own the Korn Ferry Tour, why not just make it PGA Tour Championship and PGA Tour Challenger and have a more unified branding? Now, I think the one party in that might feel a little aggrieved is Korn Ferry. If they're supporting this thing financially, and how does their tour look like? But I also think that for Korn Ferry and for a lot of these events, they're going to end up on the Challenger. The spin is a little more right-sized. Like we talked about this with the way that purses were changing and that some, local organizations and sponsors were not able to foot this entire bill as the PGA Tour was asking for increases the last couple of years. So you might find some of those events who get to a Challenger Series spot in the schedule and they only have to fork over $4 million a year for the purse and saying, this is perfect. This is exactly what we wanted. We already had great local support. We had a footprint that worked here, but we can't possibly do this $20 million deal or move to a larger market as it's been one of the rumors. This makes sense. So I think even just in the, this is really kind of back office sort of business type stuff, but I think in that respect, it makes a lot more sense for the people you're going to as the PGA Tour and ask them to spend money on your product and saying, the return you're going to get on this from a marketing perspective, a branding perspective, awareness is going to be right size. Now we're not asking you to pay a bunch of money for something. That's not going to, it's like, exactly where you stand in this ecosystem.
Well, yeah. I mean, who knows who's going to be on the Challenger Series, right? You might have
which events you're saying, right? Yeah.
No. More so like players. You could be paying, $4 or $5 million for, players that, hey, gosh, if you're a Korn Ferry Tour sponsor level and you're getting a Tony Finau, you name the player who drops off of the championship series from having a bad year. Who could it possibly be? I don't know, but all it takes is one bad year to play your way off of that tour, which is super interesting. But I think the schedule and which events qualify is probably the next topic to get into. And what issues they may be running into from a player, and what these guys typically like to play in or support. There's plenty of players that like playing their hometown events. Let's just start in Texas. Let's go up to Canada. So the Canadian Open was one that was a hot topic. Rory McIlroy mentioned that as, are you going to make it a tier two event? But even if you made it a tier one event, there's plenty of Canadians that would want to play, either way. You're not going to be able to satisfy everybody because there's Adam Hadwin Curley's on the Korn Ferry Tour. to not get that whole Canadian bucket of guys is hard. But then you're going to tell Scotty and Jordan Spieth that they can't play in Texas?
Because that's, by the way, if you've not read this detail, you are not allowed to play. If you're on the championship series, you cannot play a challenger event and vice versa. The way you could earn what is akin to a Korn Ferry Tour battlefield promotion from challenger to championship is by winning two events on the challenger event on the challenger tour in the same season, or winning a major championship midseason. Which, by the way, I saw that detail and I'm like, holy smokes, how great is it going to be if like imagine if an Aaron Rye was on the challenger tour this year, because the week before he did not play in the signature event. The week before the PGA championship, he was in the event in Myrtle Beach. And but you can, you know, there are other pathways all these guys can have to qualify for these major championships. Imagine if a guy in the Challenger Series like Aaron Rye goes and wins a major championship the following week and earns a battlefield promotion. That's like, that's going to be another really cool piece of drama and storytelling.
Yeah, there. I asked a question in the meeting. I said, is there a way to play your way onto the championship series in the middle of the year? And it sounded like if you won two events on the Challenger Series, that would get you onto the championship series, which is I think great to always have that way to move up in this system, especially if guys are going to be rolling back. But I don't like players rolling back in the middle of the year if you're in the championship series. So it's very cool that they're, you know, not just hard capping in, especially when you think about this, when there's no alternates in a 120-man event for the championship series. Over the course of the year, you're going to have players either get hurt, have babies, whatever it might be, to where they're not going to play. And so, you know, you might lose 10 guys, or shoot, there might be players that just say, hey, I'm not going to play this week. Mm-hmm. You might be teeing it up with close to 105 players sometimes. And that's
that'll
just
be interesting
reality.
It sounds like the
schedule and wherever it might be.
Well, and it sounds like the full pool, Smiley, just from what I'm reading through, it is, even though it's an average size is 120, the field size, that the full pool of players is going to be 130. And there are so many things we have to sort out here where, like the DP World Tour 10 card promotion arrangement, that expires in 2027. Now, I know that they've gone out and publicly announced a strengthening of the fall schedule and making, you know, DP World Tour event, European events, a more prominent feature of that fall schedule, which is great. But we don't know how those cards are going to work. But I thought it was interesting.
Are you saying the DP World Tours, just how they're feeding into our ecosystem? Is that what you're saying?
That's
just the relationship with the DP World Tour is what
I'm saying. Specifically, the top 10 finishers on the Race to Dubai getting promoted to the PGA Tour, that specific alliance, as far as what I'm reading, expires in 2027. Obviously dovetails perfectly with the start of this new structure in 2028. So I'd assume that
they'll take the top player to the championship series, and then 2 through 10 will go to the challenger or something. Yeah.
Which that's maybe an episode for another day. Cause I've seen some posting about this on social media and writing about this of just where does this place the DP World Tour in the grand ecosystem here of just
your challenger series is what they are.
And are they okay with that? Are they okay with the optics on that? I think they kind of have to be, but I think at the same time, there are a lot of, you know, players that are proud of the history of that tour and what it represents. And I think net going to play those, sending more guys to play those events in the fall is kind of, it's another thing you and I have talked about for a couple of years. Like, that's intriguing venues, events with history. We've heard both Rory and Matt Fitzpatrick talk about that in the past few weeks of like, there are some events there that are, you know, far more interesting from a venue perspective and a competition perspective than some of the events we play in America. So it's good to do that, but it is interesting that the, you know, the heartbeat of that tour, the rank and file membership, less opportunities to play their way on the tour in 2028. The last thing I'll say on this, one thing I wanted to tee you up on this is, I thought it was interesting hearing Matt McNeely talk about 200 plus members now know their full schedule on January 1st, right? Mm-hmm. Like that's a mm-hmm. huge, huge detail as a player.
Mm-hmm. That it is. And I think a lot of these players coming from the DP World Tour, from the Korn Ferry Tour, you know, they'd get to the PGA Tour and they see, okay, Aeon Swing 5, Next 10. Okay, what does that even mean? Like, do I play? If I play good, do I get into these? It's like, actually, no. You have to, if you play good enough, you don't get in the first two signature events. You might get into the third one. It's like, okay. And wait, so why? So I play 1 week and then I have to sit 3 weeks off? That kind of stinks. This was like
remember Pearson Cootie at the beginning of the year. He plays well early, and then they have the two signature events stacked. It's like, guess what, bud? Congrats. You got your PGA Tour card. You play great. You have to play 6 weeks in a row now. And then like decide whether or not you
burn out, man. Like he stopped playing good because he played so much.
He got the week off for Cognizant, then right back in the mix in the Florida Swing. Like that's difficult. It's really, really difficult.
The other thing too that makes me excited for professional golfers is that it felt like we kept shrinking the amount of opportunities on the PGA Tour. And the Korn Ferry Tour has gone to less cards coming to the PGA Tour. It's never been more difficult to get from Q School out to the PGA Tour. You have the America's Tour, which is probably the most expensive endeavor of any professional player's life to try to travel to Latin America and Canada to play that tour, to play for a whole lot of nothing. But now that we look at the entire ecosystem, we have 120 to 130 possible players playing on the championship series, playing for the most amount of money.
Shop the Sherwin-Williams 4th of July sale and get 30% off paints and stains June 26th through July 6th. Whether you're refreshing your interior or exterior, we've got the colors to bring your vision to life. And with delivery, getting everything to your door is easier than ever. Shop online to have it delivered or visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only, some exclusions apply. See store for details. Delivery available on qualifying orders.
We have the tech to get food delivered in 15 minutes, but we all have horror stories about buying tickets. The Game Time app gives fans the advantage. Get amazing tickets in just a few taps. Fees are included, so what you see is what you pay. And the Game Time guarantee means authentic tickets at the best price every time. Take the guesswork out of buying tickets to concerts, sports, comedy, and more with Game Time. Download the Game Time app and create an account for $20 off your first purchase. Terms apply.
You have the Challenger Series that has 144 potential players. Assuming that the Korn Ferry Tour is going to remain intact, that's around 144 players. Let's say the America's Tour continues on. Well, even before that, the DP World Tour, that typically that would be 144 players. And then you go into the America's Tour, you start to look at it. It's like, okay, we're getting, and that's without even mentioning LIV. Who knows if they will continue on. But if they do, it's another place for professional golfers to make a living, which I've argued that the Korn Ferry Tour players have not made enough money. They've had their card shrunk. And the pathways to get to the PGA Tour, you know, you could do it if you were a top-end college player to kind of skip a step, which has been, I think, a healthy change. You know, that's not something that was around, you know, 7-8 years ago. And so that's been good. We've gotten good young talent on the tour quicker. But, you know, now in this system here, it feels like to me that the Challenger Series, by the way, seven of those weeks throughout the year, they're going to be up against their track, the Championship Series events. So you'll have to make a decision which one you want to watch. And we've talked about this before of like, hey, if it's an interesting storyline at a golf course that you're familiar with, a venue that you're familiar with, that would be fun to watch. Now, the other interesting thing, too, is that the Challenger Series, real quick, is that they will have, I believe, on some of these off weeks in the Championship Series, will get bumped up the network.
That's
kind of how I think they juice, you know, this this product to, you know, some of the sponsors or tournaments that want to feel still elevated. You know, there's plenty of track two events that we already have on our tour. I mean, John Deere is probably the best example of a golf tournament that these players love to play in, but it still has a venue that we're so familiar with. It's so well supported. And it'd be great to see it still on, you know, on CBS or if it's on NBC, whatever it is. That's the more important things for sponsors is that they feel like they're, you know, still making it to that network.
I think that that's such a key detail because it once again, and this is, I think, the thing that Brian Rolapp is going to be the best at in this role, given his experience at the NFL, his, you know, innovation of product. Like, he is going to make this thing much more easy to understand, not only from a fan perspective, but from a sponsor perspective and a storytelling perspective of like, hey, you know, this is this event this week is like our premium PGA Tour Challenger event. And so you're compelled to watch this because we don't have a Championship Series event this week. And, you know, the most of the casual fans, I think what it does is it creates more of an incentive as a casual fan who might just watch the four majors and, you know, maybe the Players, you know, probably the Ryder Cup, maybe the President's Cup under normal circumstances. Mm-hmm. As you're selling them something that is like, this is elite golf. It's all these players together all the time. There's less of this. So you know when you have to show up for our 15 events and maybe you get more eyeballs there. And then if those people really are just there for Championship Series events, then they fall off in the weeks where there aren't championship events, but the golf sickos like you and I and many, many people out here watching and listening to this show have a place to go where they can watch the Challenger Series, whether it's, you know, okay, the big events. Yeah, I mean, the big events on NBC or CBS and we're watching a golf channel as you know, the same sort of format as what we'd normally see for an opposite field event, or it gets the tee up on the big network. I think it just makes this thing so much simpler to consume and understand, and even selfishly assist media people like to talk about. Like you can talk about a narrative with much more authority than we have in the past. So it cleaned up a lot of things in that respect.
I think the PGA Tour's had the most challenge dealing with their membership due to the amount of players that were in its really the top level of its of the main tour. You know, these players are opinionated, right? From the bottom all the way to the top. How do we serve the Rory McIlroy, but then also how do we serve someone who's, you know, playing limited starts or is a young player who's, you know, just finding his way into this tour, or a veteran who's never really made it to it anything higher than 70th in the FedEx Cup but has never lost its card, right? So it's so hard to appease an entire membership. But now I think the first question that I asked was, are the players that, you know, are in that 70 to 110, you know, here's an example of a player would be like a Joel Damon. Mm-hmm. Guy that's never been like too high, too low, really consistent. Mark Hubbard's another player. Are these guys happy about this? Like, you know, it's a fair question to ask. And here's just the number. I'll give you the numbers and I'll let you kind of react to it. Is that we now have a system to where instead of these guys having to try to qualify for signature events via top 50 in the FedEx Cup, which is something that the players I just mentioned haven't done. Now, these guys are getting into signature events via the Aon Swing 5, which has been a really, really cool feature in this whole PGA Tour ecosystem that we live in now. But we're talking about 80-plus players having an opportunity, you know, going up to 130 guys, right? So I think it's an opportunity that I think many players probably would say, you know what? I've done this year after year. Like, I've kept my card for 10 plus years. You know, why can't I just stay inside the top 90? That's something that I feel like is attainable. And I get to play for $20 million every single start. That to me is it's risky, right? Like, you can't mm-hmm. have a bad year or you'll drop off, but mm-hmm. it's nothing that these guys haven't handled before. So I do think that this is a more competitive system. They also, I think, would say that, hey, just because this player is more popular than me doesn't guarantee that these guys will get, you know, six more starts or whoever yes. that player might be. And all the points are going to be the same. From start to start to start. There's no weighted point system. So I think this is going to be the most fair system that could benefit a mid-tier player, but also at the same time, a top-tier player has a bad year, and next thing you know, they're dropping out. So it you have to bring it every year. And the one other question I asked was about eligibility. And does Scottie Scheffler take his 10 years of exemptions with him in this whole system? You know, how do you backlog all of the exemptions that some players carry into this? And I think that's something that they're still ironing out a little bit. You know, when they looked at, you know, lifetime achievements and medicals and tournament wins and exemptions, they're still kind of ironing that out. I still feel like they need to protect some of their assets, like Scottie Scheffler and Rory McIlroy, guys that have never had contract years out here on the PGA Tour, meaning mm-hmm. that they've haven't had a win banked to where they had potentially an off year and lost their card. So that to me is something that I think they should look heavily at. Maybe it's two wins is something that gives you that extra year because it's a validator. You know, it's just not just mm-hmm. one win. But that's kind of my general thoughts on just that top level and whether mm-hmm. the players would be upset or happy. I don't know. What do you think?
Well, so a couple things there that you noted that I think are very important. One is you gave the explanation of a guy being more popular getting into a tournament. We just need to clarify there are no sponsor exemptions on the championship series, which is huge. There are no money qualifiers and no sponsor exemptions on the championship series. Both of those will exist on the Challenger series. The details on the sponsor exemptions there are to be determined. And then you were kind of talking about the things that are still works in progress. So as you're talking about career exemptions for wins, you know, the way that this has been condensed in our sort of prep packet here is that full eligibility criteria for both series, they're still figuring out. Career milestone and medical extension rules, they're still figuring out. 10 of the championship series events for the regular season have been finalized. They still have 5. They have to figure out what events those are and where they're going to be. The full 2028 championship and challenger schedule will be announced in Q1 2027.
Which is good. That's I like that they put a date on that, you know, that we can.
This has been another great thing that Brian Rolapp has done where he said, hey, you know, we're at the Players. You guys want details on it? I'm going to tell you the Travelers. Okay, great. We're at the Travelers. Mm-hmm. You want the next set of details? I'm going to tell you Q1 next year. The reason I started to laugh is because Tour Championship venues is the next thing on my little rundown here, format details, apparently they're going to announce format and venues in August of this year, like 2 months from now. So
for the
Tour Championship. For 2028, so we should talk about that blurb next. But I just want to kind of go through.
I got a couple other things before that.
Okay, that's
before
good.
Before we kind of get off of that. So whatever else you got,
just want to hit a few more things. Just details for people who haven't read the full report. They're still figuring out Challenger Series relegation mechanism. We noted, but still figuring out the DP World Tour 10 card arrangement. They're still figuring out which fall international events, the specifics there, and the field sizes are going to happen for those. And they're still figuring out the naming and sponsorship of these series going forward. So those, I just want to get those in the notes. And then the quick reply, I know you got a list there too, but I just think it was interesting to hear you talk about those sort of tweeners of the world. I mean, not to put a specific name on it, but you mentioned Joel Damon and Mark Hubbard, and this sort of not knowing what world they've lived in the past couple of years. For me, I feel like, and you tell me as a player, doesn't it feel like whichever side of this you end up on a given year, you play well, you're top 9, you're in championship, but even if you play poorly, you get relegated to challenger, at least you have some sense of clarity as to where you stand and which starts you're going to get. And
right.
Minimum 4 million purses is a great way to live. So there's now 270 of these guys living in this ecosystem that I mm-hmm. think, you know, yeah, everyone wants to be in the championship series. But if you're not, you have more clarity on what your professional standing is. I have to imagine that is something that these guys like.
Totally. I think when you get a PGA Tour card via the Challenger Series and you celebrate on the 18th green at the very end of the year, you know what you're going to. You know how many events you're playing. You know what your schedule is. That hasn't been the case for 20 years now of what events you're going to get into. So this is a much better system. The schedule, knowing your schedule is such an important key aspect of all of this. The only thing we haven't hit on, and I'm not sure if this is something that has been announced by them or just maybe referred to, but a last chance I'm sure that's okay. So it has been referenced, but based on my general understanding of this, if you want to give any details, you can before I kind of go ahead.
So
if you have
what
something
I have
here.
What I have for you, it's a last chance series is in the fall. It's 4 to 6 events for players who narrowly missed automatic retention or Challenger promotion. There are limited championship series spots available via the series, and it serves both relegated championship players and Challenger hopefuls. Those are the kind of the key details that I have.
Yeah, and I think there's a chance that you could see could you see PGA Tour U kids in there? Could you see Q school? Like I could see Q school, you know, wrapping up before then to potentially have Q school players making their way into that. So you're getting Korn Ferry Tour players and other. You're getting so many different storylines and wrapped up into one big pool to see who can, you know, make it out to what would be, I guess, either the Challenger series or maybe a spot or two available for a championship series, which I think would make for a very, very compelling product and something for the fall that could grab some eyeballs, which right now you're like, all right, everybody's just kind of playing for eligibility. I'm kind of interested. Like, nobody really gets into signature events besides these next 10, but nobody really plays if you've locked it up. It's just better. You know, I've hardly watched any golf in the fall unless I had to. Mm-hmm. And shoot, we've stopped covering golf in the fall because it's just not interesting at all. Like, just the storylines itself. I've argued for a while. I'm like, why can't we see the Korn Ferry Tour players who've already locked up their card playing in the fall so we can at least, you know, get to know these players, get some new blood out here instead of the same. But the other side of the coin, it's like I think that the players who struggle getting starts throughout the whole year should get the whole fall to make sure that they know that they can get into these events. So they are given an opportunity now with, you know, the distinct mm-hmm. two tours. That's not an issue anymore. At the end of the year, you either did it or you either completed the task or you did not. And the only person that you can look at is yourself in this. And I think in the past, players had gripes and rightfully so. It's like, well, you know, this person got a sponsor's mm-hmm. invite, or, you know, I was playing great, then I had to take 4 weeks off before my next start, and I got hurt during that stretch. It's now much more a balanced potential professional life and golf life, where I still think that 20 events is what they have the minimum at Challenger is a little light. I'd like to see that number grow much higher to where players could play closer to every week, if possible, on that series. That would be my hope, is that, you know, every week they have an opportunity to play. Because I don't think, like, these players, they're not going to get tired of, sure. of trying to chase it to the championship series. And especially, like, I just want something on my television, right? If it's a golf week, I want to have the Challenger series on,
well,
for sure.
I guess the one sort of clerical note on that is that when we're saying 23 to 24 for championship, we're including the majors and the players in that count. And so you still will have pathways to qualify, it sounds like, even for the players from the Challenger yeah. series. So I guess if you look at that 20 number for the Challenger and you add in potentially four majors, potentially the players, all of a sudden it's 25. But I take your point. It's like those guys will play far yeah. more than that to get a card, you know?
The best way to solve for this is I don't see any reason why the Challenger series doesn't start in January. It says February to August.
Mm-hmm.
Who cares if it's competing against football?
Yeah.
Right? Like play it on the West Coast in January at golf courses that aren't your marquee PGA Tour, you know, the Torrey Pines, which I assume will be a championship series event. Go find some place on the West Coast to play. You'll have prime time. Yeah. And if somebody wants to throw it on during the middle of NFL, great. Now Rollup is pretty much drawing a line in the sand of we are not competing against the NFL. Like, golf season will be from after the Super Bowl until before football season starts, which is fine. But I think the Challenger series is something that I wish would begin before football gets going.
Yeah, I think it's definitely fair. I think on the fall thing, it's so much more. I'm going to say the same, you know, lines over and over again, but they're true. Like, the storytelling is so much better than what I felt like before. Is all right, we had our star pitcher in the game is pumping cheddar, dude, just like high 90s, low 100s, and then it's like, all right, now we got a guy who's throwing, he's barely touching 90, but just like fastballs. Now it's like, all right, now we're throwing in the guy who's got some good. some good off-speed stuff. He's throwing us some curveballs, some changeups, all this sort of stuff. And it's intriguing. We're seeing a little variety here. It's like if what you're telling me I'm showing up for in the fall is elite, interesting European venues, like places when I went to Royal County Down for the Irish Open a couple years ago. If I'm going to turn on the TV in the morning with a cup of coffee in the fall before football gets started, and that's what I'm going to see, sign me up right now. And like when we're talking about the PGA Tour Fall Series the past couple of years, the only tournament that I really found compelling was the RSM, because that was it. And you're paying attention to that the various different lines of top 100, and then even the conditional status that happened from 101 to 110, and you know 111 to 125, all that. So that was a compelling watch. But all the other events, it's like, yeah, I guess if Michael Brennan wins and he gets his tour card, that's a cool storyline. But otherwise, it's. Why are you getting me to watch this? Now I know why I'm watching all these events. I am turning the TV on for a reason. I mean, I either want to see golf at a cool place in Europe, or I'm seeing a very compelling race for the last few opportunities to play on one of these two tours.
Okay, one of the biggest failures, I think, too, of this way the PGA Tour operates now, and this will kind of lead us into our next discussion talking about potential for match play and a shorter playoff system going from it was four, it's now down to three, and now we could see down to two. But before we get there, I think one of the biggest glaring problems of the PGA Tour now is that they've tried to make the regular season points list mean something. They've tried to create this top 10 Wyndham thing at the end of the year. That would entice the top 10 players on the tour to play the season finale and have this big celebration of the season long race of, you know, whoever wins the FedEx Cup at the end of the regular season. And players, I think from many of that I had spoken with had said, you know, you play an entire season of stroke play, and now all of a sudden you're going to go play match play. It didn't make sense to them. I think networks have loved the idea of match play. I think the players have kind of bought into now that we have 24 or 23 events throughout the regular season of the PGA Tour. We have a possibility now to not have our best players finishing their last event at the Open Championship, which is not a PGA Tour event. I mean, it's a major championship. It gets PGA Tour event points. But now you could have a true celebration and a more compelling end of the regular season event. Let's say you have it in Boston, right? The last event coming down the stretch, you got Scottie Scheffler and Rory McIlroy battling for that number one spot. That could be X, right? Like this is we'll see how we look at the, you know, the playoff winner versus the regular season winner. But I think this regular season championship could be something that I think we look back on that it's almost might be more celebrated than winning the playoff structure because of a potential of a fluke winner or match play. You'll probably have fun memories of watching these players play a match play, but I definitely will probably look at that whole season much more now than I have probably in the past because the guys still continue to play in stroke play in our current format. And so it just hasn't felt like the regular season title meant a whole lot because we just kept on going with the same thing for three extra events, right?
Well, it's what we've – the line that I've used on the show when we've talked about this before is it's akin to – any football pyramid in Europe where – or just really any – I said football, soccer. I'm talking to an American audience here. Look at me. I turned the World Cup on this summer, and I come with all these highfalutin terms. But in any competition where there is a league competition and a cup competition, you know, it's like – and they're you can argue about which one's more important. I think most people would say the league is, and that is aligns with a full season of stroke play events.
Arsenal looked pretty happy to win.
Yeah, they were quite happy to
win that.
Seriously. God, like if you win, rubbing it in, I'm a Tottenham fan. Good God!
Well, you know what the Challenger Series is all about, then, don't you?
We were about a goal or two away from the Challenger Series next year. That would have been fun trying to find that on streaming services. But it really is. It's like you can, and they're both, you know, they're both a value to make it through a match play competition with all the best players in the world, the best players from that season is a value too, but it's just, they're just different. Instead of, to your point, again, this is cleaning up the narratives. It's like, what, how do these connect? Really? Like, they don't. So let's just make them distinct and let's give them their own sort of branding and purse and all that. And so, and here we are, it's happened. Do you want me to tee up venues here? You want to close
yeah, yeah,
up?
Yeah, yeah, okay. Let's get there. I mean, I'm just making sure I'm looking at all this, and I think we've touched on everything that I've wanted to speak about, which is, you know, all of this has been positive.
So yes, and let me say this: like, this is, it's highly unfortunate that even the thing I'm about to read, I think there is positivity embedded in this, and like, what is behind this? It is highly unfortunate that the tour, through numerous modes of messaging, you know, the people who wrote about this and covered this at The Athletic, I'm about to read an excerpt from an ESPN piece that was published on Tuesday in advance of Brian Rolab's press conference. But this was a key detail buried deep within the story that caught most people's attention, including mine. So the Tour Championship will continue to be played at Eastlake Golf Club in Atlanta this year and in 2027 before being rotated to prestigious courses, including many that the tour will play for the first time, such as Pine Valley Golf Club in New Jersey, Cypress Point Club in California, and Seminole Golf Club in Florida. It was later walked back a little bit. It was, you know, as whether it was via internal sources, refuted reports by the PGA Tour, and kind of said, "Hey, look, this was our vision board." I have asked questions as to like what actually happened in the room. Whose idea was this? How did this come to fruition? Was this a mistake? Was this something that was meant to be private, and these are just the types of places, if we're dreaming here, no bad ideas, this is where we're going to go. But obviously, you know, we want to figure that out before we make an announcement, and it just made its way into a report, you know, by some accidental fashion. Or was this a sort of initial trial balloon of, hey, soft asking, we'd love to come play at these places, do you want to do this? And that's an approach that I might not have taken. So I'll tee you up first. What was your reaction to this piece? And again, it aligns with what we've been asking. Can we go to some more interesting venues? But it's the way this piece was dropped, I think, was maybe the only fumble of the entire rollout of what this is going to look like in 2028.
Well, because I asked a question. I was like, I'm sure y'all saw the reports of this coming out. Is this fact or fiction? And I think they all kind of laughed and said, well, we were kind of surprised it took a life of its own, but they refuted the report pretty quickly, but also said this isn't something that isn't false, right? This is something that they could see as a possibility if they could get some buy-in, of course, from the clubs. Now, that's asking a lot, considering hosting a PGA Tour event versus hosting a Walker Cup is a little different. And just the overall dynamics of why they would support it, which I think you might be able to touch on a little bit more.
Yeah, I think, and I'll just, the first thing I'll say is I'm in no way speaking on behalf of the membership at these clubs. This is all, what I'm trying to do is
it's understanding the culture of what these clubs are. Like, why do they do the things that they do?
It's let's just look at the history of the decisions that they've made and what they're telling us through those decisions. So Cypress Point, Pine Valley, Seminole are all clubs that are support the growth of the game, and I'm not talking about it in the cliche modern
National
context,
there, right? Like, sure, I know they have their own major, but this is
there are many other clubs. I think National Golf Leagues of America, but I'm saying specific to this report, these three clubs that were named are they've supported game growth, and again, not in this cliched modern sense, but really one of the driving tenets of these clubs has been being good custodians of the game of golf and supporting, you know, really, I think, the purest form of the game in their minds, which is amateur golf, right? So when they host a Walker Cup, when they host a Curtis Cup, you know, they're not doing that because that's generating a ton of revenue for the club or because the exposure is something that's going to like help them sell memberships. Like, they'd prefer to be private, just have these places for their members to enjoy and play. And then when asked by governing bodies, where one of the key, you know, core drives of what they're trying to do is expose the game to new audiences and is do it in a way where they're showcasing a form of golf that they do believe in, like a Walker Cup, like a Curtis Cup, and they're happy to lend their venue for a set period of time. But those build outs are, of course, much smaller. And I think that's where the idea comes. I can see where the idea comes into play here. It's if match play was a limited field, more of a made for TV thing, and the footprint and the amount of course usage aligned with what you saw on a week basis for a Curtis Cup or a Walker Cup, Could that be palatable to these clubs? Now, I get that from just a purely operational course usage standpoint. Here's where I think the disconnect exists, is that we're now talking about a for-profit PGA Tour Enterprises entity. And I just don't see that as aligning with the core values of what these clubs, you know, will tell you that they stand for, not necessarily written or printed anywhere, but just by the decisions they've made and the events they've decided to host. And so I think that I saw a report, maybe it was like Front Office Sports, where, you know, imagine the amount of lucrative tickets you could sell for like hospitality at a Cypress Point or a Pine Valley. And it's like, I don't think that lands anywhere remotely on the radar of a Pine Valley or a Cypress Point or a Seminole member. I just don't think they care about that. And I think if anything, and this is why I say that it's a real shame that this wasn't handled in a better way, like whether it was a mistake or was a trial balloon, because if you would have had a private discussion with these clubs, you know, maybe there could have been some sort of middle ground to broker how it would benefit the things that they like to support in the game of golf. But now you're at a place where they're like, we don't want to be talked about. Like, why are you putting our name in this? And, you know, we're very much going to be more resistant to this. Who knows? I'm being presumptive. I just think it's a tough rollout.
I don't know how it was leaked or if, but you gotta if, think, if somebody just took on.
It materialized by the writer, right? Someone had to feed him that piece of information.
Sure. Maybe so. And I think we're, you know, if you look at this as if it could happen, you know, what would it look like for the membership to say potentially yes? We're talking about match play with 16 players. Okay, that's very similar to what the Walker Cup looks like as far as the amount of players. Okay, what about just general foot traffic of how many people can get out there? I think that's something for a tour championship. You're going to need some juice. You're going to need people out there, you know, to feel like it's an environment worthy of a tour championship finale, Super Bowl, if you will. That's a huge question mark in my mind. Hospitality. Okay, that is a huge piece in how the PGA Tour's business works, especially individual tournament by tournament basis. I think you would have to do everything off property for hospitality, which you start to think about if you build a hospitality village of sorts, different than what I think we're accustomed to. But I think everybody that would go to hospitality you'd have to go before or whatever, and everybody's hanging out, and then you get to hop on a bus and go to Pine Valley. It still kind of gets me excited, gets the juices going a little bit. So it would have to look a little bit more like that. And I would kind of leave it at, from a fan perspective of, man, that is exactly what a fan is looking for to get the TV to turn on. When we look at the playoffs for the PGA Tour and what has been an epic failure is that it's been too confusing. It's been the same hot Atlanta every single year, and that there's just no meaning behind it. It's just same stroke play, like different format. It's been a stroke play last year. It was starting strokes the year before. It's like, I don't know. It just doesn't really get me going. The players don't seem to care that much. Now you throw in match play where you might have some really interesting personalities going against one another. And you know what match play does to a guy? It really brings out the emotion in these players that we typically don't see. So, I know it'd be quick and easy to rule out these places, but if we're not aiming for the highest of what we have in America, I think they should be aiming there. Let's find a way to make it work. And if it doesn't, let's just keep on going down the ladder until we find a place of a venue that we think could potentially be a potential host. And if it's a Marion, wherever it might be, like, I don't know. What I don't want to put like a club attached to the PGA
Tour.
Don't make
the same mistake they did.
But I mean, you have to think if you can come with the correct business plan in all of this, why not? Why don't you shoot for the stars here? Because the Tour Championship and the playoffs, they need that jolt.
Andy with Friday Golf did this exercise, and it was really well done. Of just like, hey, we get that these are the sky high. You know, shoot for the stars, and you. Oh, I did the same thing Jackson did. We were at the US Open this last week, and he kept saying, shoot for the stars and you'll end up in the moon. So I'm like, I don't think that's a motivational poster, Jackson, but I like that, and I'm going to steal it and use it, and here I am. But I'd say that, you know, if you're looking at these markets, you're like, this is obviously the best place to go. Then there are these other realistic, you know, options that are, they're still great golf courses and historic golf courses, but probably more incentivized to host a PGA Tour event than some of these ones have been thrown out initially. I also need to say, like, I applaud this wholeheartedly from the PGA Tour. This is absolutely what we've been asking for of them. And I think it's good that we're doing this. I just think that this specific, it's a shame. It's a shame that thing dropped the way it did, because if it had been, you know, confirmed or prepared a little bit better, and these things are going to happen, it would have been a wonderful key piece in detail of that story. But now it's like, you wonder what the situation is going to be. So
let me ask you this real quick before we go. One of my favorite events to watch on TV before I got into TV was the Austin Match Play event. Mm-hmm. I think that you can play match play on the moon with these competitive players, and that it'll be compelling. Now, I would love to have great venues, but dude, put this thing over in prime time on the West Coast and just watch it work. Go play at a TPC Harding Park, which is a good golf course. We've had match play there before, or wherever. Find a really good West Coast venue that will take us, and just go let it go. And if the golf course is too short, doesn't matter. It's match play. Who cares about score par?
I completely agree with that. And there are a lot of venues, by the way, that are like, that are open to public play. That are like, if you want to, okay, here, how about this one? You know, Paso Tiempo is open to public, like resort play, right? I don't know if you even know if it's a resort, but it's a public. If you want to play an Alistair McKenzie course and you can't do Cypress Point, we see college events, collegiate events every year at Paso Tiempo. Why not try to do a match play event at Paso Tiempo?
I know. We have to protect against par so much in stroke play, but in match play, it's like, who cares?
I totally agree. Smiley, on that note, I'm going to engage in a little bit of game growth myself. And I'm going to be growing two games. My son Walker, my daughter Kadek, who are increasingly loving the game of golf, but being very hard to wrangle on a golf course. So
you have 22 minutes before you hit it?
And we're so far past range balls now. New play is we're showing and we're going, baby.
But if your father-in-law asks any questions about the new PGA Tour and what it's going to look like, you're so dialed.
He's been bit by the golf bug, and we were working on some shout out to the Dew Sweeper, some lower half pivot action. Mm-hmm. And I gave him one little move that Tony had showed me, like, to really kind of drive that. And he hit his best drive of the day, like the smile on his face. I'm like, this is it. This is why we play golf. So
that's right.
Going to go do that. Smiley, appreciate you getting up early and hanging and running through all this. And, that's a full rundown on 2028. And I guess going back in time, I guess you probably already heard the Travelers recap. We're going to be back here doing that if you're watching this on the YouTube right now, once that tournament's complete. So
yeah, the only other thing is that 2027 will be fun, because next year will be the year where they're all, you know, vying for these spots. Yes. So that's pretty fun that we have like a year-long play-in system.
I love that. Yeah, it's like, it's, you know, this is such a stretched metaphor, but, you know, we're getting ready to do a course restoration in Hope Valley next year. We're not aerating this year. Like, push this thing to limits. I want no punch. I want 14 green speeds for member guests of the year. Like, let's just rip this last year and enjoy it. Next year, the new thing starts.
So. Gosh, if you're a Korn Ferry Tour player, it's never been more important to play your way onto the PGA Tour this year, so that potentially you're getting to the PGA Tour next year to have that opportunity to get onto the Champion Series, to where instead, in a future year, you might be just getting to the Challenger Series. Like, you're another step away. So that, I think those would be the players that are on the Korn Ferry. Those would be the guys that are like, okay, the time is now.
The time is now, and the time for me is also now. Ball's in the air in 23 minutes. I will go. Thanks, everyone, for watching, listening, hanging out with us. We'll be back here to talk to you very soon.
We'll see you next week on the Golf Channel. This has been The Smiley Show.
You know, I listen to this podcast. It's really cool. And
all of our lovely fans and subscribers, but make sure you like and subscribe.
It's cool to see what you guys are doing. I know golf fans appreciate it, but we do too. So please keep it up.
For all the good people of YouTube, like and subscribe.
You guys have some good takes, so I'm happy to come on and shoot the